You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
We're well into the free agency period, and the big moves are still happening throughout the week. So, of course, we got to bring in our guy, Brad Spielberger, to break it all down with us. How's it going, Brad?
Oh, fantastic. How you doing?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Yeah, we're going to talk, I think, the Calvin Ridley deal, obviously a huge monster move. We're going to look at some of the best available free agents that are still out there on the board, because as much as this is an early, you know, frenzy, an early grabbing of all these top signings, there's still plenty of big names and plenty of moves that can be done available. So, let's get into it. But before we do all of that, we got to tell you about our deal over at the PFF Mock Draft Simulator, the best mock draft simulator by a mile. You're going to find 30MDS is the promo code that'll get you 30% off all of the PFF Plus goodies. 30MDS. Go to the Mock Draft Sim. Plug in that, grab yourself a bargain, and draft to your heart's content. Fix your team, including trading NFL players, veterans, all those kinds of things. So 30MDS is the promo code for 30% off. Let's start with the Calvin Ridley thing, because I think it was kind of being talked about as, look, the Jags are still in pole position to get him back. Like, that was what everybody was expecting. And then there were reports that, like, last minute, there was a division rival coming in to hijack this deal. Who was it going to be? And eventually it's the Tennessee Titans. 4-year, $92 million deal with $50 million guaranteed that pairs Calvin Ridley with Will Levis in Tennessee. What did you make of that deal?
Yeah, so obviously the dynamic at play here that was interesting the whole time was, you know, the Jaguars wanted to wait until after 4 o'clock yesterday,
right?
Because that changed the conditions of their trade with Atlanta, where if they signed Calvin Ridley before that, then they would have given the Atlanta Falcons a second round pick in this upcoming draft. Because they waited until after four, it's a third round pick. And, you know, there's some thinking of, let's let him go through tampering, let him hear some offers, but ideally we just sign him and bring him back at the end of that window. And unfortunately, it kind of worked against him, where he probably was able to gauge some interest. You mentioned a guy, Pretty Ricky, shouting out the other AFC South team that was interested, which of course became the Tennessee Titans. So I'll say this. Does it look bad that they gave up what it was like? I think it's going to be a fifth round pick and a third round pick now. And you now have Trevor Lawrence that is going to be throwing the ball to Christian Kirk, Gabriel Davis, Parker Washington, and Zay Jones. Yeah, it looks terrible. At the same time, 4 years, $92 million with $50 million in guarantees for a soon-to-be 30-year-old wide receiver, as good as he is. And I'm a fan of Calvin Ridley. I think his drop issue was overstated last year. I think his film still shows a great separator. That's a massive, massive contract for Calvin Ridley.
It really is. And I'm kind of okay with this from Jacksonville's perspective. Like, number one, I think you're right. It's the kind of contract that you probably want to walk away from, in terms of, like, this feels like, you know, when the bidding at an auction just goes too high, you've got a line, right? This is what this is worth, and I'm not going higher than that. And then the bidding goes insane. There's a point at which you walk away, right? Because it's no longer value. It's no longer smart money that you're spending. You're just trying to win the auction. Like, that's what this felt. So I think from that point of view, Jacksonville is smart to walk away from this deal. I also think, I've made this point before, I don't love the combination of Calvin Ridley and Christian Kirk in the same offense. I think they're too similar what they do well. I think they cannibalize each other's targets. I don't think they complement each other and work well as a duo. I actually think Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk make a bit more sense, even if, like, Ridley is a better wide receiver than Gabe Davis. But I think Gabe Davis is a better combination with Christian Kirk than Ridley is. So I think they're actually okay there. And obviously, you've got the draft to come, and you can still grab players and add players. And by the way, there's other receivers out there, like Marquise Brown. We might get to him later when we start talking about the best available. Like, there's guys like that that might be had for a, you know, shorter, less expensive deal, even if it's a kind of prove it type of concept. You might end up better off anyway. From Tennessee.
And I'll say this. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
Just real quick, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I haven't loved their free agency period, but I have loved two moves they've made, and you could argue maybe it's more important for Trevor Lawrence. That is, first, adding Mitch Morse at center, which is a massive upgrade. You bring a veteran that knows Doug Peterson. And then second, they deserve credit. They signed Ezra Cleveland to that extension a couple days before free agency at left guard, before we find out that the guard market is going to take off on a rocket ship through to Jupiter. So two good moves to add protection for Trevor Lawrence. Maybe you make the argument, let's just keep him upright and healthy, and that matters more than spending crazy at wide receiver.
Right. And then from Tennessee's point of view, I think it's more interesting. It's a lot of money. Whereas Jacksonville look a little bit foolish because they traded for Ridley and then end up letting him walk, Tennessee looks pretty foolish because they wouldn't give A.J. Brown a $100 million contract. And a couple of years later, they're giving Calvin Ridley a $92 million contract with $50 million guaranteed. Like, that's not a great image when you put those two next to each other.
Yeah, and he's like 5 years older than what A.J. Brown was
right at
that time as
and,
well.
Significantly worse. Sure.
Right, and last piece, now Treylon Burks, who was the A.J. Brown replacement in theory, is your number three. Although I do think, because of the lack of success so far, put Treylon Burks back in the slot as the big slot where he played a ton at Arkansas and see if that works. I think they should explore that and see if it's a better fit for him.
Well, this is – so it kind of comes back to this idea of what does the aggregate of your receiving core start to look like? Like, last year I was a huge fan of adding DeAndre Hopkins to just give the quarterback something, anything to work with, right? And we saw that. Like, Will Levis comes in, immediately has a connection because he's willing to just throw the ball up to Nuke and let him go make some plays. Now, I think Nuke is still a really high-level receiver, but the one thing he doesn't have – is the stuff that Calvin Ridley is really good at. He's got deep speed. He's got separation ability. Like, Ridley actually complements Hopkins perfectly, and then that leaves you with Treylon Burks as the guy to figure a role for, right? And I think because he's, physically big, he's got speed. Like, you and his entire gig in college was like a gimmick in every single way you could think of to make use of him. I feel like you can make that work, right? We've got the possession contested catch guy that we've got faith in. We've got the separator that can run deep, and Treylon Burks can just do everything else that's in the playbook that we don't have an answer for right now. I feel like as a trio, that should work. And obviously signals intent to let's get Will Levis, like, let's give him a chance, right? We're trying to fix the offensive line this season. Let's fix the wide receiver core. And at the very minimum, we're coming out of next year knowing whether Will Levis is the guy or not.
And that's the last piece. Like, look, we should look at every single move in a vacuum. It is an overpay if you want to look at just that move. You get the best center on the market available, and I actually like the value there for Lloyd Cushenberry. I think it's a fair deal for all parties. You get a veteran, good pass protecting, good center, and you get the best receiver available on the open market. You can quibble about the price point, whatever. Hey, we're going to find out if Will Levis is our quarterback or not, and we're making the investments to be able to say definitively, like, if it goes poorly, there's no excuse of, oh, he didn't have pass catchers, didn't have protection, and obviously the offensive line could still get better. But you are now making it where you get a definitive conclusion, this is our guy or not. There's value inherently in that by itself.
And by the way, I'm well aware that, the A.J. Brown decision and the Calvin Ridley decision are made by different front offices, essentially.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
People speak of teams in institutional terms, and the institution of the team looks dumb by comparison when you stack those two things up against each other. But Yeah, like I think it's a good signal of intent that they want to go out and give Will Levis every opportunity to make plays. And I think the way that they've assembled this group is smart. Like, just as I think Jackson, like Calvin Ridley is worth different things to different teams. I think he's worth less to Jacksonville because that combination with Christian Kirk doesn't necessarily work. I think he's worth more to Tennessee because I think the combination with New Hopkins, albeit just theoretical right now, is one that I think that should work. So maybe Tennessee overpaid a bit, but I do like the move in abstract terms for them. I think it makes sense. And I also like Jacksonville's side of it in terms of walking away. So kind of a weird move in terms of sort of makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. No, I suppose so. And that is a good point on the institution. Like, same concept of trading Brian Burns. Everyone's like, well, Carolina turned down two ones and a two. Look, Brant Tillis and Dan Morgan did not turn down two ones and a two. That was a different group of people. And obviously those people, you know, they regret that decision. And yes, it's not great to now sell for, you know, for cheaper, but they, I think, made the correct decision of where they are right now. The player did not want to be there. Just get some assets, move on. And hey, 24 hours later, they made an awesome trade for Deontay Johnson.
Right. And it's definitely easier. Like, it's obviously easier to be not burdened by previous mistakes when you are not the people that made them, right? Like, as an institution, you'd be like, ah, we sunk costs and we did this. And like, we've already can't do that after doing this. Like, I didn't do that. Somebody else did that, and he's no longer working here because of the mistake. I'm just working with the assets and the offers and the opportunities that I have on the table, and the best move for this organization is whatever it is. All right, before we get into the best available remaining guys, if you've got a family like I do, you need to get term life insurance to protect them. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make, and the start of the new year, March the 14th, is the time to get it done so you can focus on whatever else the new year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, Brad, I guess let's start with the top few. Who are the best remaining free agents after officially a day of free agency, but effectively 3 days of signing?
Yeah, yeah. I still think Tyron Smith, Dallas Cowboys legendary tackle, and I know there's been some injuries there, but at no point when he was playing was he not a clear-cut top 10 tackle in the NFL, and particularly as a pass protector on that blind side. So to me, he still is the best guy out there that can come in and make a massive difference to a team when healthy. I'm sure the Jets are all over it and trying to bring him in. I think Kansas City, frankly, is probably trying to sell him on, yes, hey, come get a ring. You know, you've made the playoffs a bunch, never gotten a ring. But Kansas City, as we've seen time and time again, they set a price point. It's pretty low, and they just kind of hope a player is willing to come play for it. So I think those two teams make the most sense, and I think Tyron Smith is the best player still out there.
Yeah, I've said for, you know, those are the two teams that I've been talking about, the Jets all the way along, and then the more this has gone on, the more I think Kansas City would be such an amazing spot for him as well. The Jets is obvious, right? That offensive line was a mess. They're making moves to try and overhaul it. The trade for Morgan Moses I really like, even though he's got some injury concerns as well. I think they're doing parts of it. Honestly, I said preseason, the Jets should sign both Tyron Smith and Josh Jones and have the left tackle fixed, right? Tyron Smith's going to play 13 of your 17 games and presumably into the playoffs if things go well. And then the ones that he misses through injury, Josh Jones comes in, you have an immediate ready-made, high-quality backup left tackle that can play those games and not be a problem either. I'd still be all on board for that for the Jets. I don't think even those two deals in combination wouldn't break the bank, and they could swing that. And then for Kansas City, it's perfect. I mean, they had a late off-season flyer on Donovan Smith last year. Didn't really work. He was not good. Didn't bounce back from the declining season he had at the end of his Tampa Bay career. Like, again, Tyron Smith comes in and immediately is when he's healthy, is still one of the best left tackles in the NFL. And for them, like Kansas City, they don't even need him playing, you know, He could miss six games as long as it's not the six that are the playoffs into the Super Bowl. Perfect. Like, if he's there for those games, you could keep him on dry ice for the regular season, then just bust him out in January and go, oh, by the way, we just upgraded to an all-pro left tackle. Have fun. I love that move as well.
We're going to develop Wanya Morris from weeks 1 through 10, right, and then we'll just drop Tyron Smith in. Or maybe if it's like, hey, we've got a big matchup against, you know, some elite edge rush. We're like, all right, Tyron's playing this one. When we're playing this other team, we can get, you know, get some development for sure. So I think he's one for me, and a couple others that I think are, you know, very, very good football players. The Kendall Fuller market to me is interesting. We've now seen some movement. The corners have done well. Shadobia Awuzie, 3-year, $36 million deal in Tennessee. You know, Sean Murphy Bunting had a great contract from Arizona. I know Kendall Fuller is looking for a third deal, but he's played, you know, 1,100 snaps the last 2 years. He is versatile as can be. You know, for our grading, he's been off the charts. I think that's a meaningful player left. And then two more, Marquise Brown now. I think the receiver market, if you're Marquise Brown, with the Gabe Davis deal and the Darnell Mooney deal as well, I think is very, very good news if you're Marquise Brown. At first, I thought 1 year flyer. Now I think he might sign a multi-year deal somewhere, and I'm thinking that could get $14, $15 million a year. And then last but not least, we know he's taking some visits. There are injuries to work through. But DJ Reader, you know, we have Cincinnati signed Sheldon Rankins, which is a move I do love. I don't think the Rankins deal should preclude them also bringing back Reader, but DJ Reader apparently going to Detroit for a visit, and I think a lot of teams should be trying to get DJ Reader on their defensive line.
Where would you... what is the best fit for Marquise Brown? Because I think he's in an interesting situation now. He's by far the best receiver left. Like, once all these guys are gone, like, the drop-off is Marquise Brown down to, like, a Curtis Samuel at this point. So if you are a team, obviously the draft is sort of looming over this. A great draft for wide receivers. There's going to be a bunch of teams looking to add guys there. But if you're somebody that wants to make a significant upgrade on your receiving core before the draft rolls around, Marquise Brown's kind of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, again, Kansas City, I think, would make all the sense in the world. And I'm guessing the same scenario. They are, maybe they're not the multi-year offer. They're the, hey, come sign a one-year flyer and be the number one wide receiver, or, you know, 1B to Rashee Rice, whatever. Come in here in Kansas City, put up a monster season, stay healthy with Patrick Mahomes, and someone will sign you the Calvin Ridley deal next year, right? Like, I think that's the pitch there. I think Arizona bringing him back would still make sense.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of teams, frankly, that could still, again, the guy, I probably said this on the show before, but when I watched his tape for the free agency write-ups, like, he was still separating at the intermediate and deep level very, very well. I think he plays above his size. Like, he's good at the catch point for a guy who's undersized. I think he's better than you know, some of the guys that have signed good deals already. So a lot of teams that need a receiver, I think, should be calling Marquise Brown.
I would love to see the Indianapolis Colts sign Marquise Brown. Like, obviously, they gave Michael Pittman the big deal to keep him in Indy to, I mean, they were keeping it anyway with the franchise tag, but they gave him the long-term contract. Alec Pierce, I think, has been kind of disappointing. You've got Josh Downs as a slot guy and more of an underneath type of threat, but Marquise Brown essentially replacing Alec Pierce in the lineup, I think, would be a phenomenal upgrade for them. Like, now you got Michael Pittman, the sort of supersized possession plus type of guy, your number one receiver. You got Josh Downs, who can be a really good player underneath and in the slot. And then instead of Alec Pierce, like, waiting for him to randomly pop off for two catches, 150, you have Marquise Brown, who's just a much more consistent threat on the other side. I think that would be a really good move for the Colts and for Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, Pittman and Josh Downs are pieces. Downs, especially last year, great in the slot. But get a guy like a Marquise Brown that can add a deep element. That, look, I do think Alec Pierce will be more productive with an Anthony Richardson. I think Gardner Minshew just didn't look his way a ton, and it wasn't a great matchup there. But, yeah, like, we're talking the same thing. You have the rookie contract quarterback. Yes, Pittman is a good number one, like you said, possession guy. Great for Anthony Richardson. Get him that deep threat element that he can, you know, throw missiles to. I think that's a good shot.
One receiver I kind of overlooked, actually, when I was saying drop off from Marquise Brown is staggering. Where do you put Mike Williams in this ranking now?
Yeah, so Williams, interesting. You know, obviously not a doctor, but look, I mean, I think there are a bunch of teams, Jets and Patriots, I've heard have some level of interest. And then people have mentioned the Chicago Bears. His receivers coach, Chris Beatty, was with the Chargers for 3 years, is now with the Chicago Bears. So a lot of people have made that connection. I think even Jonathan Jones at CBS Sports went so far as to say, like, keep an eye on them because there's that connection there. I would put him in that mix. Like, I think it's Marquise Brown, and then I do like Curtis Samuel as a player. I think he's the next guy now. Maybe he was hurt last year. Tyler Boyd did not look good on film last season, but maybe he was working through something. But to me, it's Marquise Brown, Mike Williams, and then Curtis Samuel, Tyler Boyd. And then the rest, it's like, you know, good players, but like your Josh Reynolds is like your wide receiver 3-4 role type guys.
The Mike Williams thing feels a little bit like it's almost like the narrative is starting to overtake reality with him a little bit. Like, you know, remember when I think when season ending injuries or when injuries generally cost you like the bulk of the season, it's like, oh, now it's a massive problem. Whereas when they happen just in week 17, it costs you a few games. It's like, eh, whatever. Like, obviously last season he played in 3 games, got hurt. He was basically done. Right. But before that, 2022, he played 700 snaps. 2021, he played almost 900. 2020, it was 800, then 840. Like, he's been around for most of the games. Okay, he'll miss some time, and when he gets hurt and plays through it, he's not necessarily all he can be. But 29 years old, who's only really had one season absolutely torpedoed by injuries, it feels like this is kind of a buy-low opportunity for somebody instead of buying into the narrative of, this guy is just a walking, you know, sick note. He's never going to play for us. Like, actually go, no, look, he last year was a write-off. Let's assume that's not going to happen again. We're still getting a 29-year-old vertical threat, you know, contested catch receiver. There aren't that many of those kicking around. If we don't have that skill set on the roster, like, Mike Williams is a very viable option.
Yeah, like, otherwise you're looking at like a Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a DJ Chark, similar profile players, and I think Mike Williams, again, we'll see the health, but it is better than those guys by a comfortable margin. So, yeah, that's the thing that's always interesting. Like, it's about value. Like, Mike Williams for $20 million a year, maybe it wasn't a great value, but right. If you sign him to 1 year, $8 million flyer with some incentives, you could get a ton of surplus value out of that signing.
Absolutely. I'm just looking down the kind of list of teams now, trying to figure out where actually makes sense for him to land for that specific reason, like the skill set that is missing. Baltimore, I guess, would be a pretty interesting landing spot for him based off that, like the absence of that particular skill set. But yeah, I sort of feel like this is a buy low opportunity for teams with Mike Williams, given the narrative on him right now. Another player, I guess I want to. Where's your best landing spot for Chase Young?
He's obviously visiting the Carolina Panthers today, and maybe that's the biggest bag opportunity, and so that would be, you know, the best landing spot for him. I think Baltimore could still use some edge help, and obviously he was in the DMV area, but, you know, they cut Tyus Bowser, who obviously is kind of a hybrid-type player, but, you know, Clowney, Kyle Van Noy, it's really right now, it's Odafe Owe and some question marks at edge for Baltimore. Sign him to a one-year flyer, like you just did with Jadeveon Clowney and those type of guys, and do your classic Baltimore Ravens. He comes in, has a great season, and gets you a third or fourth round comp pick. Like, that's just that's exactly how they approach it, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Now, the chat is going to be frustrated at that, Brad, because I saw earlier they mentioned that we want to send every free agent to either Baltimore or Kansas City, and you're just falling right back into the cliche. Let me give you a team that I think would be interesting for Chase Young. The Minnesota Vikings. I don't know if they're setting up deliberately to for 2025, or if that's just the way things are unfolding now that they've lost out on the Kirk Cousins quarterback sweepstakes. But, you know, Jonathan Greenard versus Danielle Hunter, they got younger. They are targeting generally younger type of players, and they're sort of setting up to have an absolute boatload of cap space next year. Chase Young is a perfect one-year flyer for them. Sort of like the Marcus Davenport deal a year ago, where we get a young player trying to prove something for 1 year. If it works out, we're going to have the space next year to tie him down long term. You know, if it's great for everybody. If it didn't, the dude has so much talent, it was worth the gamble anyway.
Yeah, no, I totally see that for sure. You know, obviously they get Greenard and Andrew Van Ginkle, but could still use more beyond that. So I think that makes a ton of sense. You know, I mean, you make a bunch of arguments. Like, Dallas loses Dorrance Armstrong. They obviously have pieces there, but, right. You know, be part of that committee and see if you can just cash in. Detroit, I think, would make a ton of sense as well. They still need edge help. They signed the Marcus Davenport that you just mentioned, but I think could still use more help there. Like I mentioned, they're hosting DJ Reader, but that defensive line, you know, needs more reinforcement. So, I mean, New Orleans, you know, you can maybe make a case. get younger. You have Carl Granderson, yes, but you know, beyond him and the legendary Cam Jordan, there's not much there. So there are a bunch of spots that I think make sense for him to come in, be a mercenary of sorts, and then hopefully cash in a year later.
The Detroit one I would love. Like, they are the perfect team to take that kind of gamble, and they would be doing it twice, therefore doubling your chances that one of them works out because they already have that gamble with Marcus Davenport. But you're right, like, same idea. They've got Aiden Hutchinson, Alim McNeil. They've got some players, but that other edge rusher spot was a real weakness for them, even with James Houston coming back, presumably to add his weight to that. Like, Chase Young in that defense could do some pretty special things and tee everybody up for, even if it's just him going to get paid next year. Eric Armstead was a player. I think we talked about this off air the other day, but he was subject of one of the funniest tweets that you see in the free agent period. Just, you know, sources say he's expected to have interest. You know, teams are going to pick up the phone and contact Eric Armstead now that he's available. So, which teams and where's the best fit for Eric to end up?
Yeah, I think this isn't even just doing the classic connecting to a former coach, but I think Houston, they've now traded Malik Collins to the Niners, and then, you know, Sheldon Rankin signs in Cincinnati. So, you know, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, Danico Autry is an awesome trio, and Autry can, of course, kick inside a little bit and rush from, you know, three tech alignments, but get Armstead, who's kind of similar, right? You know, more of an interior rusher, but can be a base end, stuff like that. I would love that. Go to Houston and have just a, you know, a wrecking crew defensive line. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Where else would make sense for Eric Armstead? Let's scan the list here. I mean, Arizona desperately need still impact players of any description. Like, I don't want to be mean to the Cardinals, but you sort of look at the moves that they're making and the defensive line that they're assembling, and it just sort of feels slightly sad. It's like, these are some nice players to chew up, like, rotational snaps. You know, if each one of them was playing 300 snaps after the good players had come off the field, you would feel good about it. But, like, when that's your starting unit, that's not feeling great.
Yeah, it's not feeling great. Good rotational pieces, for sure. Not necessarily guys you want to be starting with. So, yeah, I agree there. And then, you know, I know Dan Rossini mentioned the Tennessee Titans. I'm assuming there's the Rand Carthon connection there. And they've been aggressive. Like, I'm sure Armstead is trying to play for a competitive football team, but you can't argue Tennessee's not trying to be a very competitive football team. So that one could make some sense, too. They got to get healthy with guys like Harold Landry, etc. But could be a fun unit if you get him back. Obviously, Jeffrey Simmons. So that one makes sense. I'll mention Detroit again. Actually, New York would be kind of interesting, too. The Giants, I mean, in particular, where you have Burns and Kayvon and obviously Dexter Lawrence, but having that, like, you know, kind of Leonard Williams-y type profile back in the fold would be an interesting combo as well.
The chat is screaming almost en masse as unison the Miami Dolphins, which would make a lot of sense. Obviously, they lost Christian Wilkins to free agency. They've just signed Neville Gallimore for basically nothing. But, you know, you've got Zach Sealer there. You've got all those edge rushers coming back off injury. They signed Shaquille Barrett to a one-year deal on the edge. So there's definitely space inside for a guy like Eric Armstead to make a difference, but it's not – he's not replacing, obviously, Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, no, definitely not. But, yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. They've actually, by the way, look, have they lost a ton of talent? Yes. Is their offensive line just a massive question mark right now in its entirety? Yes. I like the signings they've made, though. I think Jordan Brooks was a good value. I think Aaron Brewer was a good value. You know, got to figure out the remaining guard spots, or maybe Brewer is a guard. He's obviously played both. But yeah, I think they've actually done pretty well if you only look at the additions, not the losses.
Yeah, that's true. They've done some good business in terms of bringing in players. Man, that offensive line scares the hell out of me again for the Miami Dolphins. Now, to their credit, it looked horrendous on paper heading into last season, and they were able to play fine, in part because Tua, from start to finish, had the fastest average time to throw in the NFL. If they're able to repeat that year on year, I mean, that does make the job of that offensive line immeasurably easier in a system that helps them out anyway, right? This Shanahan tree coaching system helps out offensive linemen. So they may be in a situation where they are able to perpetually invest less or have an underachieving-looking offensive line on paper and just be able to get away with it. But at some point, you would like to look at the list of guys on paper and feel better about them.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, look, you mask it. The quick average time to throw, and then just what Mike McDaniel does with those guys and protecting them. It's also an underrated piece of that tree. like the Niners offensive line, no one talked about it last year. They had one good player, like no, one very good player, right, and a bunch of like, you know, whatever, and they just didn't really. It actually did matter in the Super Bowl, is where it all finally popped up, but it hadn't really popped up and reared its ugly head until then. So they'll be fine. They'll work through it. But yeah. Anyway, the Armstead thing. I mean, his market should be huge. Like you know, I know he had the arthroscopic knee surgery or whatever, but and he's missed time the last 2 years. But when he played last season, he was dominant. There should be a lot of suitors there.
I mean, Armstead is kind of the same story as Tyron Smith, except I think even more acute in terms of you basically have to assume you're only going to get 75% of the season out of him, right? And who knows when the 25% are going to poke themselves up. But, like, I was fascinated the last time around. When he signed for Miami, I was really interested that he got full market rate, essentially. Like, there was no discount for this idea of, we know now that he's going to miss 25% of the season. Like, the dude is always injured, and not just always injured with like one thing, but you reach December and he's on the injury list with every body part you can think of collectively, and he just gets through it or whatever and gets to the next game. I'm fascinated that that doesn't come with any sort of like, we're going to need some money. Like, we're going to need a discount here, like something back. Cause you're not going to, we're not paying you for 100% of participation. We're paying you for 75% participation.
Armstead's, but yes, I think we're going to move from Eric to Tehran. I think we right. are going to see in the rework deal that it's a significant pay cut. We saw Tyron Smith had to take a big pay cut last year in Dallas. I'm guessing Armstead's new deal is very, very cheap because, yeah, like, you can't rely on him to be. I agree with you. Like, I have more faith in Tyron Smith playing than I do Tehran Armstead. Again, they're the same thing. When they do play, they're awesome. But the whole when they play part is the challenge.
One player, why have we not heard anything, I don't think, on Tyler Boyd, who seems to have gone from being like a key part of that three-man receiving core in Cincinnati, you know, Joe Burrow's weapons, to just the forgotten player who not only at no point did Cincinnati even consider bringing him back, it's all been on T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, but I haven't heard a mention of his name since free agency started, and given that he was like the third part of a really good offense and passing attack, it feels like there should be quite a lot of teams that should be all about bringing that in.
Yeah, so I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now. That's why I'm doing this from a hotel room. So I think he might be coming home. He's from the Pittsburgh area. I think there's some interest here, and he could be a Pittsburgh Steeler. They obviously traded Deontay Johnson. Yep. I would just say this. Like, I mentioned it before. Maybe he was hurt. I always want to have that caveat because I don't know. The Tyler Boyd on film that I watched in 2023, I wouldn't be interested in that player either. It did not look like the guy that we've watched for many, many years before that. So maybe he was playing through something, but it was, you know, like if I was just ranking off of one season and, it, you know, I would have put him lower on the list. But obviously he's been awesome for a long time before that. But, yeah, I think Pittsburgh is going to have some interest there. And like you said, Cincinnati's probably not. So it's probably moving on. I think it's one team to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and he's only 29. It would seem very, very early for a guy like that to just fall off a cliff and start declining and his career being done. Albeit, you know, he's been in the league for a while at this point. Another team I thought that would be interesting for him is Buffalo. Again, for kind of similar reasons. Like, if you've already got the number one guy, if you've already got maybe the number two guy, Boyd as your number three, I think is a fantastic addition. And if you're buying low because he's coming off not a good season and the price tag, like the market isn't there, like we were connecting them to Kansas City before free agency started. I'm not going to do that now because the chat has called us out for it. But Buffalo, I think, makes a lot of sense as well. Like, you've already got obviously, Stephon Diggs there. You've got Khalil Shakir, who kind of started to overtake Gabe Davis in the pecking order in terms of where the targets were being distributed last year. I understand that Tyler Boyd and Khalil Shakir are both theoretically slot receivers, but number one, like, Tyler Boyd is not built like the average slot, you know? The dude's 6'2", like 210 pounds or whatever. He doesn't look like Wes Welker out there, right? So I don't see any reason why he can't play outside. And also, as long as you have the X receiver, as long as you have Stephon Diggs, the guy that can go out there, beat press coverage, defeat physical man coverage from the line, the slot receiver and the Z are basically the same anyway. Like, neither one of those guys has to deal with getting jammed at the line. They're off the line of scrimmage if you want to make that happen. So I sort of feel like there isn't much of a difference between a slot and a Z receiver.
Yeah, like you said, especially with at that size, like you're a move guy, and yeah, maybe Arizona too. We keep mentioning them, but right. As of right now, they have Michael Wilson, great rookie, good piece. I know everyone thinks they're going to draft Marvin Harrison, especially after they signed Jonah Williams last night. But they could use the help too.
Did the studio lights just flash here? Are we about to explode from some sort of power surge? That would be a rough way for the show to end. Why? So same kind of idea, like. Haven't heard the mention of Tyler Boyd all the way through. I haven't heard Josh Jones's name mentioned. And I sort of feel like that dude is a walk-in starter at left tackle if someone actually gives him that opportunity. Is anybody going to give him that opportunity? And if so, where?
Yeah, that is an interesting one I agree with. At the worst, he's the best, in my opinion, swing tackle. If you take into age and all that into consideration, like George Fant was the number one swing tackle, is what I heard from everybody. He obviously signed a pretty strong deal to go back to Seattle. We don't know the base value yet, but 2 years up to 14 is a pretty good deal, depending how it turns out. But to me, Josh Jones, he's 26 years old, and he's, like you said, like he is potentially a starting left tackle. There should be a bunch of teams. I'm with you. I think it is interesting. I've heard nothing there either. Not a single peep. You know, like New York, again, the Jets, if they don't get Tyron Smith, and they, you know, I don't think they will at this point. So, you know, I think you're looking at Josh Jones maybe there. You know, like trying to think of other spots, right? There, a lot of teams that have tackle questions should be firmly in the Josh Jones sweepstakes.
Yeah, I feel Josh Jones is interesting. Teams don't like... If you don't see a guy as a starter, teams do not like players that only have one, you know, spot, that are limited to one position on the offensive line. Swing tackles, you know, you like guys that can play left or right. You like guys that can play inside, outside. You like that position flexibility of guys that can play multiple spots. Josh Jones has had a weird career where he's been basically bad at every position except left tackle. But when he's played left tackle, he's been good. His overall PFF grade for his career at left tackle is getting on for a full season's worth of snaps at this point, and it is an overall grade of 72.3, which is pretty good, and then a pass blocking grade of 76.2, which is getting towards very good. So, and this includes like right at the start of his career where he wasn't the same type of player that he is now, wasn't as good. But I do feel like if you get this guy and plug him in as a left tackle starter, he's a decent player. He might not be an all-pro or a pro bowler, but like he would upgrade the starting left tackle spot for several teams right now that have problematic areas there. But is he simply being held back by the fact that not enough teams see him as a starter and as a swing tackle, as a backup, he just has less value because he is maybe like rooted to that one spot and one spot only?
Yeah, no, it's... I don't know. Those guys are always interesting where, like you said, you're again kind of just buying on the upside potential and like compared to the market, like Jonah Williams is a more established, proven, better player. Sure. 2 years, $30 million. And you might be able to get, you know, Josh Jones for a 1 year, $6 million flyer. Like, and there's no guarantee that you get the better player for sure in Jonah Williams.
But like, to me, there's so many teams, like Tennessee, right? Okay, they're going to probably draft an offensive tackle in the top 10 who's going to come in and be one of their starters. But let's say Joe Alt is the apple of Tennessee's eye right now. You could bring in Josh Jones, have him as your left tackle, draft Joe Alt, make him your right tackle, and now you just fix both tackle spots in one move. The Washington Commanders got rid of Charles Leno finally. Like, a guy who was... Josh Jones is probably better than Charles Leno, and Charles Leno was an average, capable starting left tackle. Like, you would upgrade that spot again and again for not much money. You're going to be drafting probably a quarterback at the top of the draft, so you're not going to have the Joe Alt or the Olu Fashanu to come in and be that guy. Like, I just feel there's so many teams right now that would be better with Josh Jones as your left tackle.
Here's one more, too, I got for you, and I was going to say Washington. That's a great shout. The LA Rams obviously just went like crazy on interior offensive line. You know, are they going to start? You know, I saw they put a second round tender on Alaric Jackson at left tackle. Okay, fine. But you bring in Josh Jones and, you know, Rob Havenstein, I think, has always been kind of durable and never misses time. But again, if you need Josh Jones to step in for a veteran player that maybe misses some time, that one makes a lot of sense to me, too. If you're going to go all in on offensive line to give two guards gigantic contracts and ignore tackle, you know, to a degree, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, absolutely. I just think there's so many spots that he fits in as a starting left tackle. Again, like, even if even if having no position flexibility is not ideal, I think there's enough teams that are in need of fixing that one position that he's good at that he should have some value and should have a market right now. All right, let's move on from the Josh Jones propaganda hour. Who else is in our list of top free agents? I feel like I haven't heard enough about Justin Simmons since he got released as a cap casualty.
Yeah, I was going to throw a different safety at you. So let's talk safety market. So I would say Cameron Curl, I've heard literally zero about as well. Yeah, Justin Simmons, I think after the Kevin Byard deal came through, and I haven't seen the details yet, it was pre-free agency, 2 years, 15 is the report. We'll see what it actually is. Like, if you're Justin Simmons, that's a floor for you, no question about it, right? If you're Justin Simmons, you're like, all right, I'm not taking anything less than this. And I do think, there probably are a handful of teams he's talking with. It sounded like Tennessee, I think, had a conversation. And Gianni Rossini was saying that he wanted too much money for their liking. But Simmons should have a huge market, too. He is still a very, very good football player, no doubt about it.
Before we get into some other topics, taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. And that's why for the last year or so, we've been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes us feel energized and ready to take on the day and take on free agency. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers our daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, we know we're given our body's high quality nutrition because every batch of AG1 goes through a rigorous testing process so you know it's safe. The ingredients are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. We like to drink AG1 first thing in the morning, which is recommended for optimal nutrient absorption. Fill up your water shaker with extra cold water, add one scoop of AG1, shake it up, and you're ready to go. If I'm running short on time and I can't mix the AG1 before heading out, grab a travel pack. Each is an individual serving of AG1 that's easy to mix on the go, helping ensure we get our daily nutrients no matter what. If there's one product we have to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/PFFNFL. That's drinkag1.com/PFFNFL. Check it out. All right, let's move away from the best available players left. What are your favorite moves that have been made after this first wave? What are the favorites of the second tier moves that you've seen?
Yeah, we highlighted Sheldon Rankins. I think Cincinnati interior defensive line was probably the biggest weakness of that roster. So getting him in the fold there, like I said, could still use more. But him and B.J. Hill gives you good pass rush interior. I love a DJ Reader or something to kind of be that 0-1 tech for them. And then they just brought back Von Bell, their old pal. And Von Bell has a similar situation to, Russell Wilson, those type of guys. He has guaranteed money from Carolina. So I think that deal will be a minimum because it's going to be offset against, what he's getting paid by the Panthers. So I think very quickly that defense that struggled mightily last year got a lot better in about, 12 hours.
So I asked Trevor this yesterday, and we talked about it a bit, but I haven't got your take. Who do you love the most in terms of overall free agency sort of pieces of business? Like who are the winners of free agency in your eyes team-wise?
Yeah, I think the Houston Texans for me, and I was saying this before the Danielle Hunter deal, not trying to react to, who signed the biggest contract. And I do like the Hunter deal because I think it's funny. 2 years, literally, C.J. Stroud has 2 years left on a rookie contract, most likely, and then he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL if he keeps playing like he has been. So let's bring in a stud edge rusher for literally those 2 years. But the Danico Autry deal to me, I love it. They made who is that linebacker? Aziz Al-Shaair is right. A fun player. I think will be great with D'Amico Ryan. So they just very quickly overhauled that unit. They already have the offensive line pretty much in place. They could use maybe some more weaponry, but bringing back Dalton Schultz was a good value for them and a good player. I think they've done exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, I love the Texans. They've definitely had one of the best free agent periods as well. I think also even just little rolls of the dice like Jeffrey Okuda in a one-year flyer deal just to see if there's anything there for a former number 3 overall pick that hasn't necessarily worked out in the NFL. I like the Joe Mixon deal. I know we're anti-running back at PFF, but PFF Bobby wants to run the ball. He wanted to upgrade what he had last season. He wasn't happy with the run game. Joe Mixon has, track record as a bell cow type of running back that can do everything in an offensive system that should be more conducive to Joe Mixon's success, right? Like the system that Bobby Slowick is going to be running there should help you get a better version of Joe Mixon than we saw last season. So the trade for him in exchange for a seventh round pick, like that's absolutely a roll of the dice that I think is worth taking. So Mixon, Schultz coming back, Danico Autry, Danelle Hunter, Azeez Al-Shaair, Jeffrey Okuda. Like, it's a pretty nice haul.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 110% there. I think it really just, like, they made the one splash. It was more just, let's just continue to kind of be smart about how we're going about this. And I think they really, really have. They had to get aggressive in this window, and they did. I'll throw another one out there. Minnesota, they need to figure out quarterback, obviously. And, you know, credit to Sam Darnold, got a over 100% raise off of last year with 50 pass attempts, which is awesome. I mean, like, good for him. But to put that one aside, and obviously he's going to be a bridge to somebody else. But I just like the idea. All right, we're going to get younger and we're going to get cheaper. We're going to get Jonathan Greenard, who's not as good as Danielle Hunter. Fine, but he's 3-4 years younger. He gets a 4-year deal instead of two for a good bit less, you know, annually and all those things. He actually had less guarantees than Danielle Hunter's 2-year deal. So that, I think, was a great signing. Andrew Van Ginkle reunion with Brian Flores. Blake Cashman was awesome last year. And now you're just, I think they're probably calling a bunch of teams to try to trade up right now and go get their rookie quarterback. But they finally turned the page. They made the tough decisions. And I think it was just the time to do it.
Do you think that they are sort of building for 2025 rather than 2024? Like, is this, I don't want to say intentionally tanking, but is this a team that's finally looking at this division and saying, okay, Green Bay might be amazing next year. Detroit is already really good. Chicago is making moves. Like, we are not competing this year with a rookie quarterback that we don't even have on the roster yet. Let's actually focus on 2025. Let's clear out the Kirk Cousins contract. Let's get rid of some other deals. Let's get younger. Let's target the future rather than next season.
So I think when you bring in a rookie, you probably, let's just say they do, and they might not, obviously, but you probably are thinking of the second year anyway. But I'm not sure you could argue there's a much better place for a rookie quarterback to get dropped into than Brian O'Neill and Christian Darrisaw at tackle, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, Aaron Jones now as well on offense. And then, you know, you want to have at least a decent defense so the quarterback doesn't feel like he has to score on every single possession. And they will be better, I think, than last year, at least in some respect. So, yeah, like, they're probably not thinking they're going to be a contender next year, but I don't think I think they're too talented to be like flat out bad. Even with a rookie going through the growing pains of a rookie quarterback season, I think they're going to be decent.
Did you see the report that Justin Jefferson, apparently a year ago when the talks for a contract extension sort of first broke down, turned down an offer of $30 million a year from the Vikings, which I guess begs the question, where is this deal eventually going to end up, assuming they get it done, which I think both parties seem to want to do still. Like, we're not in a situation where either Jefferson or the Vikings want to move in a different direction and trade him away. They want the deal done. It's just where they are, how far apart they are in money. So with the cap going up, with Justin Jefferson being as good as he is, where is this contract going to end up?
Yeah, if I had to take a fairly educated guess, I would say this. You look at Minnesota historically and their precedent, they want to sign 5-year extensions. Danielle Hunter, Stephon Diggs, even recently, Brian O'Neill, all the guys they're paying. TJ Hawkinson gets 4, but at tight end, that's a pretty, you know, that's a good length, good term. If you're Justin Jefferson in this receiver market or just the NFL in general, you want to sign a 3-year deal just like everybody else recently. Michael Pittman, Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, all those guys, right? That is now the going term for a wide receiver. And so I'm guessing it was, 5-150. That's not a good deal for Justin Jefferson. I know it sounds crazy to say that. It's not a good deal. If I'm him, I want 3 years, 100, right? Like, that is what I'm looking for right now. And even maybe making the argument of, I want to surpass Nick Bosa. I want 3 years, 105, right? I want $35 million a year on a 3-year term. If I'm him, that's what I'm asking for. And he has every right to ask for that amount of money.
So if the Vikings want their way and they want to stick with this 5-year thing, is the only answer to that to just push the numbers higher and higher? Like, eventually they're going to be, you know, they're going to have to give him 35, 36, or whatever, a year to get him to the 5 years.
Yeah, they'll probably meet in the middle at four is what I would guess. Like, there's no I just think there's no scenario where he signs a five-year extension. If it was five, I'd ask for 40. Like, seriously. All right, we're going to be 5 years, give me $200 million then. I would guess they'll go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and maybe the final concession point is four, because I think Minnesota really does want to do three, and I don't even think Justin Jefferson and his camp would entertain five. So get to four, and then it becomes literally like, do we top Nick Bosa or not? Right in that wheelhouse. You know, he's $34 million a year on his deal. So I think that's where it is. But I know it sounds crazy fancy. Justin Jefferson turned down $30 million. I would have done the same.
I mean, when you start looking at it, like Tyreek Hill is at $30 million a year APY. Davante Adams is at 28. That was the contract that was the sort of outlier for a while that teams didn't want to go near. But now it's being surpassed. It's being... at the very minimum, it's no longer an outlier. It's up there with others. Then it's Cooper Kupp, A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, DK Metcalf. These guys are at 24 and above. So with the salary cap going up, with Justin Jefferson being as ridiculous as he's been since he's coming to the NFL, I mean, it is a perfectly reasonable starting point. Like, why would I even entertain anything that was $30 million or below? Because that was the old top of the market. The market just went up by $30 million a year.
And I would say, if I'm him too, you're now sitting there just saying, I'll let Brandon Ayuk go, I'll let CeeDee Lamb go, and then I'll sign mine, right? Look at DK Metcalf, the example I just gave. He let Terry McLaurin, Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, all those guys sign. Then he came in at the end and got the best deal of all of those players. So if I'm Justin Jefferson, it's the exact same thing. CeeDee Lamb should also get above $30 million a year at this point. Ayuk, maybe not, but honestly, I think if he was in a more high-volume passing attack, we might make that argument too.
Right.
So yeah, there's also patience is a virtue for him. He should be in no rush.
You're right. Like the longer these deals go, it only ever benefits the player. I mean, this was like the Dak Prescott contract the first time around. Like, the longer the Cowboys waited on that, the more expensive it got. If they just done it right away, they would have saved themselves a fortune. Instead, they backed themselves into the corner, have to give them massive top-of-the-market money, and are now going to have to do it again at some point. You're right. Like, the longer this goes, the more expensive it gets for them. So if the Vikings want to get them done, just give them the damn money. It's not getting any cheaper.
Nope.
One piece of news, I guess, we got to break before we bail on this show. The Lions have extended both Dan Campbell, head coach, and GM Brad Holmes only 3 years into their six-year deal. So presumably an extension in this case is a massive pay increase for both those guys.
Absolutely. And you'd assume Ben Johnson gets a pay bump as well. So look, there's been a lot of organizations that have been viewed as cheap or whatever. Tennessee, to me, I think it's been pretty cool. Like, they're spending, like they are doing things differently than they have. And I think this new Detroit Lions ownership group and everything has done the same. I mean, the head coach and the GM, yes, but also, you know, Mike Disner is one of the more respected football administration executive type guys in the entire NFL as well. They're going to about to extend, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jared Goff and everything too, but they are getting aggressive, operating in a different manner. But yeah, these guys deserve raises, deserve extensions, so good for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, this is the area where if you're an ownership, that if you're in that, the NFL PA report card bracket of team owner willing to spend, like, this is where you should be spending, right? You've got a GM and a head coach that could not have really done any better than they've done since arriving in the building, so... absolutely. Invest in them. Make them happy to stay. Make them, 100% bought into the organization, not just working for their paycheck. Let's reward them for what they've done. Let's encourage them to do more. Absolutely spend. Give them the extension. Give them more money. All for it.
Yep, no doubt about it. I mean, they both deserve it 110%.
And I guess the closing thought in all this is, look, we're 3 days really into free agency. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys, right, that have effectively done nothing. Trev wrote off their season yesterday. You know, it's all done. It's too late.
Oh, wow.
It's already gone. There's still so many talented players that can be signed, and often for not much money at this point. Like, there's a bunch of teams. If you start looking at team needs or holes on the roster or, you know, weak starters or whatever, there are so many names out there right now. We ran through a few of our top guys, but so many that we didn't even get to. That can come in, that can fill a starting spot, that can be a capable player for you going forward. Like, maybe the best business of free agency has yet to be done, and we got plenty more in the tank before we actually get around to certainly week one, even the draft.
Sure. I would not write them off just yet. I think they will. they're focusing right now on retaining their pieces, maybe trying to push to keep Tyron Smith before he goes elsewhere, and then also just – wait out a little bit. I think for them too, they need to address like off-ball linebacker safety a little bit. They really need to rush to get those things done. They weren't going to make a splash at the top wave. They need to extend CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott first and foremost. But they also last year, they almost always sit out free agency, but then they trade for Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cook. So I think they recognize there's a bit of a window. They're going to want to be aggressive. I think they'll get there. Like a Jerome Baker still hasn't been signed yet.
Yeah.
Like there are going to be more cuts as well. More players that get moved on from. You know, they have their own guy, Michael Gallup, who might be moved on from. They could be a Mike Williams type team. I think he does fit stylistically very well, opposite of a CeeDee Lamb, right? So Dallas will make their small moves here and there. That's just how they operate.
Yeah, absolutely. I find it funny the divergence between the sort of caricature image of what Jerry Jones is and what he actually does as a, you know, as a GM, as a guy that runs the football side of the organization. Like, he doesn't behave the way the cartoon version of Jerry Jones would dictate he behaves, right? The guy that had the like paid tours of the Dallas weight room with the two-way mirrors, like that guy you would expect is just going out there throwing money at big names and, you know, marquee signings and just guys who would move the marketing needle. And he doesn't generally. Like, Jerry Jones is actually a far more restrained, like boring GM than people give him credit for.
Yeah, no, he is draft and develop. He is about building internally and getting Cowboys. And look, he's always tries to take care of his guys. Like, he early extends a bunch of dudes. Probably should do it more often for you know, quarterbacks and receivers and stuff like that. But like, yeah, they just don't really believe in adding externally. And they've been drafting phenomenally for the last 10, 15 years. But no, it's funny. They are like, they're going to spend a whole lot of cash this offseason. Might be top of the league, but historically, he's like middle of the NFL in cash spending on his roster.
Oh, I wanted to get your take. One last thing before we bounce here. Josh Uche signed a deal with the New England Patriots. It gave him 1 year, $3 million with incentives that can get him to 8.5 or something like that. And immediately when that came out, a lot of people's reaction was, wow, Josh Uche could only get $3 million in this marketplace, you know, with 90 pressures over the last 2 years on whatever it was, 500 snaps, pass rushing snaps. That's crazy. That seems like a terrible deal for Josh Uche, right? Quite soon after that, there were a lot of reports out there going, oh, Josh Uche turned down more money elsewhere to go re-sign with the Patriots. Now, one thing about free agency is it has become agent mouthpiece season, which means like every insider, every reporter out there is just, they're not even hiding it at this point. They're just copying and pasting the text message from the agent and tweeting it. So what is your read on the Josh Uche thing? Did he actually take a significant pay cut to stay with New England because he's really excited at the Gerard Mayo project? Or is that simply damage limitation because the alternative explanation is the agent did a crappy job and Josh Uche could have gotten more money somewhere else?
So here's the fascinating thing with that dynamic. We hear the blurb of could have taken more elsewhere about 100 guys in offseason, right? I have never seen that I can remember the actual terms be tweeted out. Tom Pelissero in the tweet said a 2-year, $15 million offer with $11 million guaranteed. I also won't name him, but he's arguably repped by the best agent in the entire sport. So it's a fascinating dynamic there. Of like, was that damage control, not even from Uche's side, but like the agent being like, look, I could have done better.
Right.
Like I wanted to do better. The player didn't want to. I don't know. I really don't know. But that to me was very, very interesting. I've never seen that before. I don't get it from Uche's perspective. Like, if the team that you wanted to go back to, like, thought you were a three-down player or loved you from a football standpoint, like, it would make sense. But like, there were times last year when Matthew Judon got hurt, and they still weren't playing Josh Uche more. Like, his snaps didn't even increase after the edges got hurt. It was like, okay, now we have Anthony Jennings, who's our, like, superstar run defender. We're going to play him way more. It's interesting. I mean, like, never want to say guys shouldn't have their own motivation. Maybe he loves the team, loves the city, whatever. That's awesome. I probably would have pushed him very hard to take the 2-year 15 with 11 guaranteed.
The only way it makes any kind of sense, I think, is if Uche is convinced that Bill Belichick was the one that had him, like, marginalized as the situational guy. Because remember, like, for years that was the dude whose name I'm completely blanking on right now. They've sort of sidelined these guys as, you know, permanent fixtures as a situational guy, and have determined that they're just not going to be every down players to them. If he thinks that that was Bill Belichick, Dietrich Wise is a player whose name I was blanking on. Like, Dietrich Wise was the situational guy that couldn't possibly play a full slate of snaps. It took him, like, how many years did he go before he finally got given, like, a full-time workload? One, two, three, four, five years of situational before he played 800-plus snaps and had a career year. It's like, if... maybe that was a Belichick thing. Like, for some reason, Belichick pegs these guys as, this is my third down pass rusher, you know, obvious pass rushing situations only. I'm not buying into him as an every down guy. And if Uche thinks that was a Belichick problem, but actually Gerard Mayo was fighting his corner and saying, this dude could be like a superstar if we gave him a full-time workload, that kind of makes sense. Like, I like it here. I like the guy. He had my back, and now I want to show him, like, he'll play me how much I want to get played, and now if I have a great year here, everything's good.
Sure, and again, like, that is the one thing, and this offseason has been one of the best examples we've ever seen, by the way, of the one-year flyer guys cashing in, like, it working out really, really well. Like, Drew Tranquil was a one-year flyer guy. It worked out great for him. Dalton Schultz was a one-year flyer guy. It worked out great for him. I wish I had more examples, because I had a list going. There was, like, 10 dudes that did that, went that route. Some didn't even play all that well. Oh, yeah, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson didn't even play this season,
right,
but just took the one-year flyer because he wasn't getting good offers, missed 15 weeks, and still – and we got to see the details on that one. But anyway, like, there is certainly an argument of, if he took the two-year 15, let's say he was incredible in the first year, he could have gotten extended, but obviously you just never really know. So – the one-year flyer had a great 2023. Maybe some players saw that and said, okay, like, I would rather do that and then try to really, really cash in as opposed to give away more years of control, and then it works against me.
I mean, I think sometimes the one-year flyer is – we tend to talk about it only in terms of, you bet on yourself for a year, you come to free agency off a better season than the one you came into this time around where the offer you wanted wasn't there. I think sometimes there's merit or value in it just – coming to free agency a year later where the dynamic in terms of who's available and who has money and, like, everything is different, right? You're just sort of shaking up the board a bit and the circumstances are different. So an offer might be there in 12 months' time that wasn't there this time around, even if you didn't functionally change anything about, you know, your specific circumstances. So even if you didn't have a career year, you just came to the market 12 months later when the whole world is different.
Bullseye. No, it's exactly what it is. The best example to me is Dalton Schultz. The tight end draft class last year was awesome, and there were some other options in free agency. I still think he was the best tight end available, but there were a bunch of other options too. Now, the free agent class was basically non-existent, and the draft class has one player that people like at tight end. So the linebacker with Drew Tranquil, the same thing. I don't think we're going to get a top 50 pick at linebacker in the draft class. So you're right. What they functionally did in their own by themselves arguably didn't change.
Right.
It just every other external factor lined up better for them.
All right, that'll do it for our free agent week of coverage here at the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve reliably informs me that he will be back on Monday and actually turning up to his podcast at some point. So big thank you to Brad and to Trevor for filling in during Steve's absence. Hope you guys have enjoyed listening to our free agent coverage. Check out the rest of the channel for individual videos, and we will see you on Monday.